Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Hour number two of the program begins with Blair Kirkhoff, one of our favorites. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. I-35 in Santa Fe in Olathe. Great selection right now going on. 0% for 72 months on the 2017 GMC Yukon XL. The ultimate family vehicle. You can get it right now. 0% for 72 months, plus $13,000 off on GMC Sierras, and up to $5,000 off on GMC Terrains. It's at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 in Santa Fe, online at robertbrogdon.com. Blair Kirkhoff is with us here in our Rally House studios as he gears up for a big weekend of college football. But we're actually going to start with college basketball, Blair. Let's start with the report from the Kansan, which... Hey, listen, I don't want to run down a fellow media member. I mean, I just don't do that ever. that's not true. I will if I think they need it. But FBI tells the Kansan it cannot release documents regarding this. Is that the FBI can't release them to the Kansan. Not that the Kansas has them and the FBI says hold them, right? The FBI says it cannot release documents regarding KU involvement with Adidas due to ongoing legal investigation. This has made the rounds, at least with people that I know, generally of the Mizzou persuasion, that are reaching out to me like, look, check it out. And maybe we can get to there's another Tudor allegation going on in the SEC, which we can talk about in a little bit. But what do you make of this? Do you make of this? I think what you know, the Mizzou fans that are like the rivalry and are looking for any dirt to get under the Kansas nails are saying is, see, there's definitely an investigation there. Kansas is under the microscope, and they're just ongoing, and so they can't say anything but look out, wait, here it comes. That is certainly one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is they're saying we're not releasing anything on anybody, on Kansas, on anybody, because it's an ongoing investigation. I mean, when they have somebody dead to rights, they'll put it out there. How do you take it? I'm not sure how to take this. Does this mean that Kansas is under the microscope, or is this just a blanket no answer? And for the Kansan, that only moves newspapers if you say specifically we asked about Kansas, they said a blanket no across the board.
Well, first of all, I like that the Daily Kansan, the school paper, did this. I mean, they took the initiative and decided to file a Freedom of Information Act request to see what documents they could get, and the FBI told them there were no documents to be had, or you're not getting what we have. So it was a shot. You know, they took a shot, and so my hat's off to them. They're doing their job there. But what I would tell,
and we should point out, I don't think the FBI is going to work like the Waco Police Department. Just leave the investigation open for three or four years to protect the guilty.
Right, we got it.
Yeah.
I do think that. If you're out there wanting to see bad news happen to Kansas or to anybody really, just the FBI is going to do its job here.
Yeah.
The FBI is not playing favorites. Don't be patient if that's your objective. But I think every school is a little nervous. Anybody who is playing big time college basketball, recruiting at the highest levels of college basketball, is a little nervous, and I've been saying that for a couple weeks, and Kansas is no different. Kansas, of course, gets swept up in a little bit more of this because of its association with Adidas, but just a few days before the FBI had its press conference to announce this, Kansas had its own news conference to announce its $350 million investment in athletics, especially football, which included the $191 million contribution from Adidas, contract with Adidas, that spans over the next decade and a half. So, yeah, so my bottom line is I wouldn't make too much of this particular news item, but that doesn't mean that the FBI isn't looking into, and the FBI said as much back a couple weeks ago that, this is we're just beginning this. We have the goods on these 10 people, including the four assistant coaches that were arrested. And actually, those coaches, including Lamont Evans of Oklahoma State today, I believe, had their day in court. They went and appeared before the judge in New York. So this is far from being over, and it is far from college basketball is not going to exist in the way that it has existed or operated. I think we're going to see big changes. I know the NCAA announced a committee yesterday to make some changes. We'll see where that goes. But you know, as for this particular story, I think good job by the students at the Kansan, and I don't think there's much here.
And do you think you wrote about in today's Kansas City Star, it was online yesterday, about the commission that's coming about? What are we going to get from that, do you think?
You know, what I did was kind of write the news of the, because I thought it was interesting that Mark Emmert in just a couple weeks has put together a committee of a pretty interesting cross section of people. I think it's 14 people on this committee to really dig into the culture of college basketball and to see what the NCAA can do in terms of working with the NBA on the minimum age limit and some working with the shoe companies, what they can do. What I think the most interesting thing was the reaction that I saw from some of the real big thinkers in college, in the media and college sports, saying, well, this is useless. You know, nothing's going to come of this. It's, the NCAA is doing what the NCAA does. It forms a committee when there's a problem. But I disagree with that. I think that Condoleezza Rice is no, that's no small,
right,
person. That's, I think this committee, this commission will actually get some results. And whether it's, whether it is establishing its own eligibility rules for college basketball, or drawing some kind of lines with shoe companies and relationships that shoe companies can have with sports, I think that the fact that
who put the commission together,
I think it was Mark Emmert, but
so
we know
it's an NCAA inspired.
It is, but okay. We know that among those who were the big criticism was you had 14 people on the committee, and none of them are. None of them have gotten their hands dirty. And what I mean by that is, of all all the controversy, what this scandal is about, you can identify some people who have some really strong knowledge of the scandal and put them on the commission, and probably have a greater, at least greater knowledge of what's going on in college basketball.
Is the theory, though, we don't want anyone who's already got the dirt on them? Look at it, or is this just window dressing?
But if you had put like a Phil Knight or somebody, or George Raveling, somebody.
But isn't the feeling that they were at the beginning of how it?
They
got
were
to
at
where
the beginning.
Is?
They were at the grassroots level of this. The fact that they have Mike Montgomery, the Stanford coach, and John Thompson III on the committee, these guys know how the game is played.
Sure.
I like that they're on this committee.
I do too. But is Phil Knight bringing the fox into the hen house?
Certainly,
maybe the NCAA's got a word that Phil Knight's name's going to come up in this eventually. Anyway, we're doing a committee to fix how the shoe companies are in there, and one of the guys on the committee is now under investigation under indictment.
It could be like the basketball committee. When we talk about him, he has to leave the room.
Phil Knight, the head guy at
CEO
Nike.
CEO at Nike.
So, yeah. Just to bring people up to speed.
I think this is a worthy thing. It actually happened a lot sooner than I thought, and I think the NCAA is clearly embarrassed by these revelations. I don't think that I think everybody understands, the seamy side of big time college sports recruiting and how money gets exchanged, but I think the NCAA. Finally, now has a good reason to put an end to it, because the feds are involved.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the NCAA had that kind of incentive before, and now it does have the incentive to really take control of college athletics, at least in the recruiting area.
Sure.
So we'll see.
Let's and the grand jury being called in on Oklahoma State.
Yeah, for Oklahoma State.
That's scary for Oklahoma State. That's scary for Illinois.
Yes.
I would think that's scary for South Carolina. That's scary.
Maybe for St.
For
Louis,
K State a little bit. Anyone
Ford
who's had any connection with Evans, and I say South Carolina, Frank Martin had Evans on his staff. I say Illinois because
that's where Brad Underwood.
Brad Underwood just came from Oklahoma State, so they got to be wondering, is he wrapped up in this? And he had Evans on his staff. I mean, that alone. scares a lot of people.
Yeah, and so they've taken a step further with this assistant coach than they have with the three others, with the guys from Arizona, Southern Cal, and Auburn. With Lamont Evans at Oklahoma State, they've gone as far as, you know, subpoenaed the grand jury and put together the grand jury and have subpoenaed the all this information from Oklahoma State. Man, it's when a grand jury's involved, then. You know,
they're closing in to do the final.
Yes,
with all we're coming with guns blazing.
All the records, all personnel files. It's they must have more on him than the other coaches, I suspect. Or at least it's the first one they're getting to.
We're talking to Blair Kirchhoff here in the program. Let's stay with all the problems in sports before we kick over to some of the games. Auburn. Investigating a tutor. This is a similar situation, it seems like, to what Missouri has on its hands. We haven't gotten a resolution in Columbia, Missouri. I don't suppose anything's coming in Auburn, Alabama anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. And I use the Missouri example as the, you know, how time marches slowly in these matters. Heck, the North Carolina academic scandal has been, you know, was revealed years ago, and we're still awaiting a resolution there from the NCAA. But man,
and remember, the lesson for all you fans out there when it comes to North Carolina, if you're going to pass kids with a bogus class, just make sure you send some of the regular students through as well. Then it's cool.
That's right. Make sure the fraternities and sororities all have access to it.
That's right. Get the rich kid donors kids in that class. Let them pass easy. And then apparently it's not a violation.
Great for the GPAs.
It is.
You know, for the frat house GPAs.
Nobody told me what that class was at Syracuse. Although, you ever heard my freshman bio 101 finals story?
No.
All year. It's a full year class, right? You got to take a lab or something. I was like, fine, I'll take a lab. So I take bio, get to the end. It's we just went to lab whenever. You had your like little breakout study times, but your lab, you could just come and go whenever you wanted,
right? Those classes.
But for the final, you took your final at your lab time because it was proportioned to fit everybody into the class. Right. You had a time, but you didn't have to go then. So first time you're in lab, at the time you're scheduled to be in lab, is the final of second semester because it's a full year course. I started taking roll call. Only time they take roll call, right? They're going through A's, B's, get to the C's. You remember I went to Syracuse University. Think about the time I was there. A foreign TA.
Yeah.
Coleman? Coleman. Derek Coleman. Coleman? Derek Coleman. Does Derek Coleman? And like everyone's snickering and laughing, right? People don't know Derek Coleman was the star player on the basketball team. He was the number one pick in the draft. In about a month, he was going to be the number one, or 2 months, he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. She's like, Coleman, Derek Coleman. Everyone's laughing. She's like, I don't know what's funny, right? I don't even remember what nationality she was, so I apologize for a bad impression.
Just a generic.
But a generic from another land, right? And
it's weird because she was Dutch, you said. I don't know why. Strange.
But, yeah. Anyway, so.
Australian. I don't know why she talked that way.
Finally, everyone's giggling. She's like, somebody knows Derek Coleman? And finally, this guy, he's going to be the number one pick in the draft in 2 years, or in 2 months. I don't think he's taking his freshman bio final, which the beauty was, he was a four-year player. This was not one and done.
Right.
He was in freshman bio. As a fourth-year senior. So that was, I guess, the closest I had to being in the Passum class.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and this is just another piece of bad news for Auburn.
Yeah.
You know, with the basketball now, and there's some other sports that they're having trouble with. And it comes at a time when their football team's actually performing pretty well.
They've got a 14-6 loss on their resume to Clemson.
Yep.
They beat Alabama. They're in it. They're still alive as one of the teams for the national champion. In fact, I had to bump them a couple of notches. I think OU, they were moving up past OU, and I was looking at the resumes, and every week I look at every team's resume, and there was Wisconsin. I think I bumped them up over Wisconsin. Maybe it wasn't Wisconsin. I don't know, whoever it was, I jumped them because I'm like, listen, this resume is really good. The Auburn resume is really good, and it's only going to get better when you consider the Iron Bowl at the end.
Yeah.
If they win that, I mean, they're in the driver's seat. They are in. You know, go into the SEC championship, then theoretically beat a Georgia team. Hell, they could be the number one seed the way it goes right now. So they don't need these kind of distractions.
So I'm having this conversation with somebody yesterday about about all the problems in college sports right now, and you know the scandal, and we talked about Carolina's academic issues, and just one after another, and then we get around to but how good is the team doing? You know that's where we that's the push and pull of college sports, isn't it? I mean,
we're
still going to watch, and we're still going to attend the games, and it's still this allure. What does college sports have to do for us to not watch it and not to pay attention to it?
Stop playing, apparently.
Shut it down.
Auburn is 7-point favorite at LSU, so maybe a salty test. Who knows what Ed Orgeron's team is going to show up with. They had enough to beat Florida, but we'll see if they have enough to handle Auburn. I kind of don't think so. I like Auburn minus the points in that one, unless this distraction starts to blow them up. We'll take a break. Blair Kirkhoff's with us. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon, Buick GMC. When we come back, we'll get into some of the games. Still some more news we might get to if we've got time, but some games on the slate. No game has two top 25 teams, but some intriguing games in both the Big 12 and SEC. That's next here in the program. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro, Blair Kirkhoff with us from the Kansas City Star, college columnist, hardest working man in the Kansas City media is Blair Kirkhoff. He's brought to you each and every week by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC at I-35 in Santa Fe. Blair, let's discuss a couple of the games. Let's start with the biggest one, I think, here locally. TCU laying 6. Coming into Manhattan, Kansas, it's time to dig in. I mean, this is it for K-State. If this is going to be a challenge for the conference title, if they even want to be going into those last couple of weeks being talked about as a potential in that Big 12 championship game, they got to get this one.
Yeah, especially after, I don't want to say they gave one away last week, but there was an opportunity, good opportunity to win that game. 10-point leads early in that game, and I thought they played with a lot of heart. I don't know if they, you know, I made enough mistakes to lose to a, you know, to what we think is an improving Texas team. But man, I hated to see them lose that one. But it puts them in a, you know, it puts them in this place where backs are to the wall when it comes to if you want to be one of the top two in the Big 12. Now you got to win one that you might not expect it to win, and now TCU becomes one of those games for
K-State. It does, and when we see, you know, it's a great accomplishment for Tom Herman and his staff. Big win. I don't know if they're looking at it that way in Austin. They should.
They should. Absolutely.
They really should. But then I think this is one, and this game gets played, I think, a little too much. More about Texas or more about K-State, the result? Is it because those are the games K-State wins. That's what they do. Bill Snyder doesn't go into the league and usually win by 40. I mean, he usually doesn't have that personnel. He grinds the game down, minimizes the number of plays, and then they make the plays it takes to win the close games, and that didn't happen in this game.
But you asked a good question, because I thought about that. As soon as after the game was over, and Texas wins it in the second overtime, I asked myself the same thing. How do you frame this? Is it more about K-State, as a neutral observer, more about K-State losing or Texas winning? And I think just because, you know, Herman got off to such a bad start with that Maryland loss and had a chance to beat a USC team, which would have been a great win, and didn't finish that game in overtime. Actually, it is more about Texas. And Texas being able to not be defeated by a Charlie Strong team wouldn't have won that game. You know, they would have been defeated by the earlier losses. But Tom Herman, maybe he disappointed in the first month of Texas. But he begins the second month with a really nice win over, you know, a program that's owned Texas. And so that bodes well for Texas, probably bodes well for the Big 12, because you know what, Texas and I always believe Texas and Oklahoma have to be strong for the Big 12 to be strong. And so it's a good win for Texas. I don't think it's a devastating loss for Kansas State, especially because I still think this team has the ability to get to 8-9 wins. And I don't know if they're going to be one of the top two. We'll see. I mean, we don't know. What about Oklahoma now? We don't know what they're about. And weak enough to lose to Iowa State, good enough to win at Ohio State. If TCU runs the table or at least goes 8-1 in the league, maybe there's a big dogfight for second place and K-State can be part of that.
Yeah, and that's where it is. But is it a sign that things are coming apart at K-State? I mean,
I don't know if they're coming apart. Look, Jesse Ertz played hurt in that game, had to be replaced, you know, in the second half, and Alex Delton did a really nice job, and I think he's going to start this weekend for the Wildcats. Indications are so. I thought they made the most of a tough situation, and maybe we overestimated K-State a little bit early on. And he had all these offensive starters back, but Ertz has been playing hurt, and he hasn't played like the quarterback that, as you have said, you know, a quarterback in the K-State system needs to play with as much experience as he had for the team to have the aspirations that K-State has. We haven't seen that yet from that position. It can still be there, but it's not there now.
Listen, when you clamor at K-State, whether you're criticizing someone for not giving you more credit or just hyping yourself up, and you talk about got all these starts coming back, more starts than we've ever had coming back under a Bill Snyder team, quarterback in the second year under Bill Snyder, all these reasons, and then it doesn't work, you got to ask yourself why. Those are all valid reasons
they are.
For them to have the excitement. And I would pose a question that I've posed numerous times before. And if Alex Delton, and when I see the explosion of Alex Delton, and look, K-State fans, I love them. They're always so excited about the guy. And we had Stan Weber on earlier, and he said Skylar Thompson is just a hair behind Alex Delton. So that's two really explosive athletes. And Jesse Ertz is an explosive athlete. Neither was Colin Klein. Colin Klein was a Heisman Trophy caliber player. And I think that was the hope, that's what Jesse Ertz was going to do. You know, he was going to have the accuracy, throwing the ball, and the vision and the patience, which he does show running the ball. I mean, he gets every ounce he can out of running the ball. I mean, I do think he got really knocked around. I think sometimes he looks to get down, which is okay. But I don't know that this isn't a team with Delton behind him that you don't go, no. You got to fight for all of it. And if you get hurt, we got a kid who can come in here. I think he plays a little protective now. He runs a little more protective this year than he did last year. I think he's, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, and maybe that's what he's been told, and maybe our view of Delton, maybe he's light years behind Ertz. I mean, Stan was clear, if healthy, Ertz is the guy. But I'll ask the question again. Delton was there last year. I get what Ertz can bring to the table. Ertz had no experience last year.
No, because of the
injury. You gave him the experience over Delton. If you'd given Delton the experience last year, would we have seen an L. Roberson or a Michael Bishop caliber quarterback this year? I mean, there's almost like it's his turn, so I'm going to give it to him, and you got to wait. I mean, he didn't get Cam Newton. Now, that's a mess on its own, but he was in the discussion for it. Is part of it like, hey, you don't really give it to the most explosive guy. You're not willing to maybe take one step back to take two forward on down the road. Has Bill Snyder made a mistake?
Maybe. It could be. What we don't know about Delton is his passing ability, but that's the type of thing that gets worked out with the experience, because we can see how strong a runner he is. So what we don't know about Alex is, what was he? How many passes did he attempt the other night? Just a couple?
I think it was 2 for 5.
And he's only thrown 10 or 11 in his career, so we don't know about him. And that's been the knock on him. And look, obviously, K-State coaches see these guys in practice all the time that nobody else really gets to see. So, but your point isn't without, you know, merit, that you identify a player and you pour everything into him, and sometimes it's not the right guy. Sometimes it just isn't. I don't know if we can say that yet at Kansas State. Let's see what Alex Delton becomes. See what he can do. See what he is.
2 of 5 for 30 yards, by the way.
Against Texas.
Yeah, against Texas. I mean,
but he was. Remember how excited everybody was when he signed? He left Hayes High midway through his senior year in high school to be part of the spring workouts, and we just thought, man, this is. I remember going into that year, Kansas State had no quarterback experience, but more quarterback talent than that was how it was described. More talent than they've ever had.
I mean,
at that position.
You can see the juice he brings when he runs the ball, and the run is
he's strong. He's good size, and he's strong, and Texas couldn't handle him.
And Jesse Ertz was 12 of 18, 67% is very good overall for him. 224 yards, 2 TDs, 1 INT.
Yeah, but I forgot how to pronounce his name. Schoen, the wide receiver from Blue Valley North, walk-on. Man, what a find that guy
is. He played really well. 7 touchdowns, 3 interceptions this year, 9 and 4 last year. I mean, how much are you losing in the passing game? Again, Jesse Ertz ain't spinning it around there like he's Dan Marino or something.
And the receivers are having still have a case of the drops.
They do have a case of the drops. I'll say this, Ertz looks good. 9.3 yards per attempt, says he's pushing the ball down the field.
That'll get it done.
Which is one of the things I've always appreciated about Bill Snyder. Although, I will say this, I'll ask you, does he underutilize his running backs? Like, I like that he pushes the ball down the field, but he could use a little bit of Andy Reid, some screen game stuff, some bubble screen, flex him out, especially Dan Warmack. Looks like a guy, like, line him up out there at wide receiver and step back and throw a bubble screen. I mean, they do a good job of showing the run, play action, and then let's stretch the field. When we throw the ball, we're going to try to take a chunk. But they don't get the running backs the ball much. They rely so much, and this is another thing, if you're going to run the quarterback, and I get the extra hat. It's an extra blocker when you run the quarterback. Okay, I got it. But Alex Barnes can run the ball. I mean, you know, he's got ability. And they don't seem to want to feed him the ball. So, I don't know. Again, I defer to Bill Snyder and his greatness. Right. But I think if you're a K-State fan, you got to – and K-State fans have done a pretty good job of compartmentalizing, like, no, Bill hasn't done anything wrong. It's Dana Dimmel!
Yeah.
Right. Come on! Like, they will question Dana Dimmel like it's nobody's business. Bill's got it all figured out. It's Dimmel who's screwing it up.
When Delton was in the game on Saturday night, and I felt so strongly about it, I think I put a tweet out that it's time for the pop pass. It's time for the Alex Delton pop pass because it had worked earlier in the game to Dimmel, the fullback. He didn't score, but that's 'cause I think he fell down or he wasn't in a good place, but they ended up scoring on the possession. I think that's the most effective play in college football. It's a fantastic play.
Now, listen, I get it that part of the reason your yards per carry are what they are is because of the plays you've called. And,
correct.
And that you're a bit of a surprise maybe because you're not just pounding away with the running game. But Alex Barnes is averaging 5.1 yards per carry, Warmack 6 yards per carry, and Silman 5.1.
It's pretty healthy.
So, I mean, just something to consider if you're the K-State Wildcats. Sounds like Delton is going to be the guy. We'll see how that plays out. OU, 7.5-point favorite against Texas. Love me some Sooners in this one.
I think they. I think this will be an interesting week of practice in Norman, and they better get their defense fixed for starters.
Yeah.
But let's assume that that's nothing like a loss as a 31-point favorite to a team that has national championship aspirations to get your attention in practice that week. I think in a game that truly is a toss-up and, you know, and anyone can win sort of thing, it really is the most neutral field in college football every single year, Dallas for the Texas OU game. I think Oklahoma will be on an emotional, you know, we'll have the emotional advantage coming off the loss. And maybe Texas is feeling a little bit too good about beating K-State in a couple of overtimes. I like the Sooners.
That's exactly the situation that I see here. I know it's a rivalry game, and you throw out the records, and anything can happen. And it has. And there have been times that OU's been definitively the better team, and Texas has won, and vice versa. But I don't see it in this one. I mean, you put this spread out 2 weeks ago. This thing's 17.5. And I really think that that's where it belongs.
Experienced quarterbacks have an edge in this particular game, and Baker Mayfield is the experienced quarterback.
Although I do know, you know, Fat Jack talked about it, and we'll hear from him a little bit later on. He said going into the K-State game, if they start the freshman, Texas wins.
Yeah,
if they don't, I'll take K-State.
Yeah,
and that seemed to have nailed it because that kid was Erlinger. 487 yards, I think, of total offense.
They got
107 rushing, 380
passing. Might have something
passing.
With him, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing because Bouchel in that Notre Dame game, you're like, Texas has finally got their quarterback. And it turns out, no, it's this kid. So impressive. Let's give it the Iowa State side, by the way. I want to point something out for Kansas fans, and I use my school, so I don't like to use Mizzou or KU when doing – or K-State when comparing them. But I want to give you an example of something. Kansas is getting 22 at Iowa State. Now, again – rewind 2 weeks ago, and I think that number would have been more like 7.
Yeah.
Right? Because
much lower.
If you look at what Iowa State's resume is before they beat Oklahoma, I'm going to tell you, they were not in my top 40 or even one that I was looking at. Right? I have like another 5 to 10 schools, and I'm like, all right, I got to keep an eye on these schools. They weren't there. Now, I pushed them into my top 40 because now they've got losses to Iowa by 3 points. The Texas loss looks better.
It was a 10-point game, but wasn't a 10-point game.
Score. Yes. Iowa State was right there the whole time. And I think it's notable that Iowa State had their performance without the quarterback, who was arguing with the coach on the sideline. And I think that should be something here moving forward. But before this, they'd beaten Northern Iowa and Akron. Whoop-dee-doo, right? So even just back up 7 days ago, like they were going to lay 7 to 13 points against Kansas, I think. Now they beat OU. KU is a 22-point dog. At Iowa State, who is 3-2 and yes, beat Oklahoma, but the other games are Northern Iowa and Akron. Those are their other wins. You know who else is a 22? This one's a 22.5-point favorite. Clemson at Syracuse. Okay, we're not good. And we're only getting 22.5 from a team that's one of the two teams that I listen to the college football shows on ESPN, and they're starting to talk about, well, I mean, is college football even any fun anymore? Because we know it's just going to be Alabama and Clemson. Like, they're now viewed as an Alabama. They're laying 22 on the road at Syracuse. Kansas is getting 22 at Iowa State. There's like a 44-point difference between Kansas and Alabama and Clemson. Maybe, I mean, what would they hang that number? 50?
Yeah, probably.
59, 60? I mean, this is old Big 8 days against OU and Nebraska where the spread differential is.
So, to me, we talked about how Oklahoma and Texas are going to come off their outcomes this past weekend and how that'll influence their game this weekend.
Well, this is the time to get Iowa State.
With Iowa State, if you're Matt Campbell, who, by the way, is going to get tons of offers now after this season, and however long he's in Ames, he's going to be hot commodity coach.
Let's do let it play out, because I want to point out after Kansas, which they better not lay an egg and have a big letdown, which is why I think you were leading up to.
Yes.
Because after that, he's got to go to Tech, host TCU, at West Virginia, host Oklahoma State. Now, that is a gauntlet of four games in a row.
I've got to lose in all those games.
I mean, there'll be a dog in all of them. At Baylor, at K-State. So there'll be a dog at K-State. We'll see what Baylor does. I think that they'll be in a good spot to win that one, but I don't know. But that's five more losses to the resume. This could be a 5-7 team. It looks a little bit different.
Right. It does. But I think if you're Matt Campbell, the message you've got to present your team this week is, you know, we haven't gotten anywhere close to our goals. You know, look, you got a great win, but we lost at Iowa and we should have won that game. You know, so that it's
you know what I'd do if I were Matt Campbell? I'd show the video of the Cyclones locker room when they were bouncing up and down when they beat, who was it, Nebraska?
Nebraska, yep.
And you know, Coach Rhodes.
Yeah.
How bonkers they were going, and then I'd put up record, yes. next year's record.
That's a great point. Yep.
You know what? Nice win, but what are we? Do we want to be a neat story one Saturday afternoon?
A YouTube sensation.
Or are you ready to show up, go to work, and make that a regularity? That's the pitch that I'd make about
Matt
Campbell.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, absolutely. And I have no reason to believe that he won't do something like that, because I think he's the goods. And that was superbly done Saturday at Norman without their quarterback, with a quarterback situation totally up in the air, for them to go down and put that much offense together to beat, you know, a team with that we all thought was one of the top three in the country. So as it relates to Kansas, is this an opportunity for KU? Do they catch an Iowa State at a good time? Maybe. But I'm so down on what happened Saturday against Texas Tech. Week after week, it seems to be the same old at KU. And having this conversation earlier this week, who's being held accountable for what's happening at Kansas? If you're going to give Clint Bowen, the defensive coordinator, your ringing endorsement like Dave Beatty did this week, who's held accountable for?
Well, I listened to Dave Beatty with the Border Patrol, and his topic of conversation was celebrating the Illig family and how good the soccer is. And I heard that, and I'm like, that sounds like a guy who's trying to love up the big boosters. Like, hey,
certainly
guys.
Deflect attention.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was like, I don't know if that's a good sign. I mean, I get it. I like me some Cliff Illig. I think the Illigs are wonderful people.
I agreed.
I mean,
we can talk about them, but we're not trying
that's
to deflect
right.
attention.
There's nothing we're looking for. We're not trying to fund the stadium that we think we need to build our program. But they're just such down-to-earth, wonderful people. But as the football coach, I mean, that to me is a kind of a cry for help. That's a desperation.
Man, I thought Saturday was a step back for KU. That's the way
you think.
Oh my gosh, the way that thing unfolded. And
why do they start the game? And I'll quote Rob with this because he's the one who came up with it. Whatever the spread is, they immediately give that to the other
team.
That's
right. The game starts with that.
If the spread is 17, it's 17-0. Then they're like, let's give it an effort. In the second quarter, they give it an effort. It was 21 in this game.
Yep.
Or no, I think it was 17
well,
in this one.
Well, but, other, but it was 21-0 before the end of the first quarter.
35-19, a little bit of heart. I'm like, nah, I really don't think they can play even football the rest of the way.
But you never know. You're at a point where you just don't know.
And I will quote Curtis. They've had some, oh, by the way, scores in the fourth where, you know, Curtis talked about Mizzou, like, hey, we don't even give you the oh, by the way, effort at the end. But no, not this time. This time seemed to feel like a team that is like, okay, uncle. You know, so we'll see. We'll see what he brings. Maybe his last stand, but I think that 22 is a really scary number. I will take a break and talk about Mizzou catching 30 in Athens. What does that mean for the Tigers? It's next here on the program. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with Blair Kirkhoff. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC at I-35 in Santa Fe. Find him online at robertbrogdon.com. Kansas City's number one volume Buick and GMC dealership is Robert Brogdon. We're live here at our Rally House studios. Blair, Mizzou is plus 30 at Georgia.
Missouri needs Georgia to be disinterested in this game.
They're not winning this game.
No.
But did they find something with their touch with Kentucky?
That's the post-game question for Missouri.
Or did Kentucky look past them? And Kentucky's a program that's not ready to look past anybody.
Well, there is that. No doubt about it. But to me, the how do you – what should Missouri – glean anything from a close loss at Kentucky? Is that where
we are?
Not beating Kentucky, but playing them close and you know, actually having a good argument at the end of the way the officials conducted the, you know, the game at the end, which was totally it was terrible. The Missouri didn't get at least one more.
And to Barry Odom's credit, he didn't come out and say, "I'm not calling that a loss." Like we heard Gary Pinkel against Iowa State. That's shame on you, Kevin, for calling that a loss.
Right. And he had every right to be mad about the way that thing ended.
We're 9-3. We're 9-3.
Right. Yeah.
I love Gary Pinkel.
Yeah, that was a bad moment for him.
That was not his best. I mean, I don't know.
The
worst moment might have been the protest and the turmoil and all that. But that was his worst PR move.
Yeah.
That he ever made was doing that. But yeah, I mean.
But look, I was Drew Locke. I was encouraged. That last touchdown throw he made, that 75-yarder that got it to 34 all, that was a great, great throw. Throw down the field.
We finally got a game where Drew Locke has had a real performance
against a
real opponent.
Right.
I mean, so I think that is potentially the sign of.
But bad opponent for Missouri to try to take a little momentum into, if that's what you want to call it. Boy, Georgia's playing so well, and Kirby Smart seems to have brought a little bit of that Alabama magic to Georgia.
We
the East favorite now is Georgia.
Yeah, and we talk all the time about the riddle of the quarterback. I mean, you have to solve that riddle. It's one that clearly has not been solved in Lawrence, Kansas. You either have to be able to make one, a la Bill Snyder, or you better be able to find one. And
it's usually not the transfer route.
Right. Or maybe a combination of the both. Maybe you'd say Gary Pinkel did both. He'd find a guy and build him up. You know, I mean, Gary Pinkel is the best example of a program that's not a powerhouse program that consistently had the quarterback. But there are powerhouse programs that can't get the quarterback right. I mean, Kirby Smart does seem to be a lot of the juice, which, I mean, if you're not an Alabama fan, you're hoping, listen, McElwain, Smart, Kiffin, Sarkisian, at some point, doesn't this guy run out of talented coordinators? I mean, Bucket Hat's the offensive coordinator now.
Yeah.
Do you remember Bucket Hat here in Kansas City? I forget his name now, but Brian Daboll. Nice guy, like Brian Daboll. But, you know, he as the OC in Kitten, I had Matt Castle as the quarterback, and I think that's a train wreck. But, you know, he just keeps turning it over. At some point, you got to think that, okay, it started to come apart at Florida State. When Bobby Bowden lost Mark Richt to Georgia as his offensive coordinator went to Georgia, Mark Richt, and his defensive coordinator, Chuck Amato, went to NC State, and they both had success, sustained success, and Mark Richt still getting it done at Miami. Chuck Amato had a period at NC State where he was really succeeding.
That's right.
And he was older, and he's now out of the game. But Kirby Smart does look like, oh, good Lord, here's another Nick Saban over here, kind of like Dabo Sweeney, as right. whatever he is. you know, which is great. It starts at great, and you figure out what yeah. what style of great. Is he a 10 as a blonde, a brunette, or a redhead? But he's a 10. Kirby Smart starting to turn that way, and he's got a freshman quarterback, and he just nailed the number one recruit in the country. That's another quarterback.
Yeah. No, it's things you're looking up at Georgia. A perennial disappointment. Always, Georgia's maybe one of the programs in the country where their fans are just so out of touch with reality, have been over the years about what they think Georgia should be. But maybe they're going to get there this
year. Vince Dooley won one title. They're like Tennessee, man. Georgia and Tennessee, they've each got a title. Tennessee might have two. I got to look it up.
Well, they got one from the 50s.
Yeah, so they got two. They got two titles. But boy, they're like, dude, it's us and Alabama.
Yeah,
man, it's us and Bama. Florida's got that mindset too. When I hear people are like itchy about Jim McElwain, I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, they at least won two. I mean, they Urban won a couple there. So,
Well, Spurrier won one.
Spurrier
won
three.
One,
that's right, and Urban won a couple.
Yeah. So they've got a little bit more reason, but it's all recent.
Yeah,
I mean they have this like mindset that it's all the Penn great State, great Notre tradition. Dame, Michigan, Alabama, Texas. USC, Texas, and us, and OU, and Nebraska, and us. We're right there. And it's like, not so much. But yeah, Georgia's going to lay a huge number in that game, and I do think it's of note because A&M is only a 2.5-point favorite at Florida. And when I heard it from Tim Salmon on the drill that there's a faction of Florida people that don't like McElwain.
Oh man!
Like now, listen. The guys who got suspended—they're suspended on his watch.
Yeah,
that's not like a doesn't count. But
I think he's a heck of a coach. He's won two divisions with a team that can't come close to beating Alabama in the title game. But
he's also got two losses this year and two wins that are on a Hail Mary.
Right.
We didn't bother to cover the outside guy game against Kentucky.
Right. Game he should have lost.
What the hell is going to happen to the SEC East if Kentucky wins it?
Well, Georgia's obviously going to Georgia. It's going to be Georgia and everybody else in that. In that division.
That's what it looks like.
Maybe for a while. This A&M at Florida game is fascinating. First of all, A&M at Florida, has that ever happened? I mean,
I don't know.
I can't even picture what A&M at Florida might look like. But this might be, you know, Florida's last hope to be part of the division this year. Who is the second best team?
They've got to beat A&M, and then they've got Georgia on a
you know,
neutral field
in Jacksonville, right?
Yeah, so they've got that game. After that, at Mizzou, at South Carolina, UAB, and Florida State. Mm. So they're going to wrap up their league here pretty quick. In fact, they've got four more league games. What I do think is interesting is Kentucky. Who's second best? I mean, right now it looks like Georgia's miles ahead. But here's the thing. So Florida's only got the one loss, and they own Georgia of late.
They do.
So if they take down Georgia, then they're going to be it. Because if they get by A&M.
Yeah.
And they're not
A&M's
a big favorite.
Game for them.
They're, like I said, 2.5. But then at Georgia, at Mizzou, at South Carolina, I mean, those are obviously winnable games in the league. Now, they could fall to Florida State and then end up being this 9-3-ish team going in to take their beat down at the hands of Alabama. But listen to Kentucky. At Mississippi State, Tennessee at home, Ole Miss at home, at Vandy, at Georgia, and Louisville at home.
Well,
they're dogfights in there, but they're going to be 2-point favorites, 2 to 6-point favorites in just about all those
games I rattled off.
Except the Georgia game. They'll be catching a huge number in the Georgia game. But after their bye week, this week, they're on a bye at Mississippi State. I mean, that's probably the toughest game till they get to Georgia.
Hope for Missouri that Kentucky can turn in an 8-4 or whatever it is. If they beat Louisville at the end, maybe a 9-3, and you stick with your coach for a while. If you think he's the right guy, you stick with him through some really lean years early on.
I don't think they're going to go 10-2, but I think point spread wise, I don't know if they're going to be favored at Mississippi State either. So we'll see. But
right.
It's a winnable game. We
right.
know that.
But all the other ones you rattled off, and Vandy's squirrely. I don't know about Vandy.
Yeah, Vandy. For Kentucky, those are salty games.
Right.
All of them
right.
really are salty games. But we'll see how it plays out. Blair, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.